What's up, ladies and gentlemen?
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Eigen Bros. Mm-hmm. Today, we're talking about nuclear bath salts. No, I'm just
kidding. Pretty accurate, though.
Yeah. We're talking about, I was going to say thermal. Dang, I'm always blanking on the name.
Thorium.
Thorium. I always want to call it thermal react. I guess it's thermal react.
I just think of the Avengers.
Thorium. That's a great. That's a great image. Yeah. I always think of thermal reactors. And I'm like, it's not technically not a thermal reactor. Well, I mean, well, I guess
kind
it
of,
is.
It's releasing heat.
Yeah, it is.
But actually, a thermal reactor is a specific type of distinction that's actually different from the thorium reactors that. Yeah,
exactly.
So technically it's not. But
yeah. So this is where this is where I mess up all the time. So I would say today we're talking about thorium reactors.
Yes. And
then we kind of talk about, let's say, I mean, we pretty much keep that up until the very end, which we're talking about rebuilding society, based
how
on
we would do it.
Yeah, based on an alternative energy source or something, or how would you, using the physics knowledge that we know, how would we do it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you would like to know how to do that and survive an apocalyptic event, and you want to be cool and give electricity to your. To your tribe,
then definitely watch till the end.
Yeah, stick around.
Or else you're missing out.
So, make sure to follow us on socials, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, like, share, comment, subscribe if you haven't yet. And then also, guys, once again, check us out at eigenbros.com. I recently updated the website to make it look a little bit nicer. Check that out. Check out Twitter, Eigen Bros. Check out the Instagram, Eigen Bros as well. And then finally, check out the TikTok, if it's still around, Eigen Bros 2. And that should be it. Anything else, Juan?
No, that's it.
All right, see you in a bit.
Cool. Oh, yeah, time at 3, 2, 1. We're live.
We are live. I'm forgetting how to do introductions.
Yeah, I'm just ready to go.
He's ready.
Ready to go. I caved. I took a monster. I had a Sabbath. I had a caffeine Sabbath yesterday.
You were doing so good, Juan.
I had a caffeine Sabbath. You got to have one. You got to have one, and you got to just, you know, you got to make these count.
Baby steps.
But
fair enough. I'm always playing with my stupid mic, man. As soon as it began, I started.
Sorry.
Such a bad habit.
Yeah, rest in peace, headphone users. I think it's fine.
Yeah, leave in the comments if it's annoying as fuck that I keep playing with the mic, because I don't ever hear it, but Juan hears it.
I do, but only because I do audio. Mm-hmm. But it's fine, I think, generally.
Let's hope.
Yeah. Anyway.
So let's talk about. Well, go ahead.
Well, we promised last week that we would talk about an important topic that was kind of hinted at.
Yeah.
And it was
thorium.
No, salt baths.
Salt baths.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I think that's kind of related, but I'm trying to figure out where you're going with this.
No, salt baths, how relaxing they are, how, you know, the science behind it, why is it so relaxing?
Strangely enough, salt baths are very relevant to thorium.
Oh, yeah, I figure.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you knew that or not.
No, I do, but but the thing is, I was kind of curious because we were debating it, right? We were like, why isn't thorium reactors are seen as this like holy grail in the zeitgeist?
Yeah, in the energy community right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
I guess yeah, currently within like the past decade or so.
Yeah. It constantly harped on, just saying like, you know, why isn't it a thing?
Yeah, so I guess let's I'll go ahead and do all the spoil. I'll give everything.
Spoiler alert.
Well, I'll just give everything up right now in case you know people don't want to watch an hour long podcast to figure it out. So basically, it was pretty much like we thought. So last week we kind of speculated on why thorium wasn't a thing, and from the research I did, my conclusion is it has to do with money and physics or / engineering. So is it legit? Yes, it is legit. But the problem with it has to do with money, pretty much, is my conclusions.
Yeah. And by money, you mean like the cost of infrastructure or like adapting?
So
what do you mean?
So the thing is, thorium is supposed to be cheaper, actually, in its construction. But the problem is, thorium reactors work so differently from the water-based cooling reactors that we have already, that it's a lot of like redesigning the whole architecture. And research basically stopped on thorium like decades ago.
Like, are we talking about 70s or 80s or something?
Well, yeah, but 90s? Then also they revamped it a little bit, and there were two, they call them MSRs or, crap, I suck at acronyms, I'm trying to remember, molten salt reactors.
Yeah.
And
sounds about right.
Those research projects basically stopped in like 2011 or something.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Conspiracy? No, I'm just kidding.
I don't remember why, but no, because they were retaken up by China, for one, has put more money into researching thorium reactors.
So China is like a... I imagine China is a big player in this because they're probably looking for a safe way to mass produce cheap energy, right?
Yeah, because you know how it is. In China, they got horrible atmosphere. I mean, their pollution and CO2 emissions was something like 6 times the amount of the U.S. Mm. You know how Beijing just has horrible, horrible skies. I know, you know, we have friends who, you know, I don't know. I think you do as well, Juan, in our graduate physics program, who have gone to China. Yeah. And even people who are from China, and they talk about, especially people who haven't lived there. A buddy of mine specifically I'm thinking of just hated China because it was just so you couldn't breathe there without a mask. It was just, dang, the pollution was so bad.
Dang. That's insane.
And he just felt dirty. When you would walk on the streets, you just feel like you're just covered in just a layer of dirt.
That's crazy. But I mean, it makes sense because you talk about a population density that's, you know, it's like New York, but pretty much
Probably way worse.
Yeah. Because we're talking about, you know, U.S. is 300 million.
Yeah.
It's not a lot.
Not compared to the billions.
China and India, like all these other countries like that are just like building up to become financial economies in some sense. Yeah. Like they're just got a massive population density and they have to produce energy. Like right now, the cheapest way to get energy, because it's heavily subsidized, is oil, right? You're kind of just,
yeah, I think that, yeah, that still is the cheapest way. Of course, we're most of the nations in the world, at least the leading industrialized nations, are trying to look into clean energy. So the top choices, of course, being wind, you know, solar, I think those are the two top. Of course, storage is a big one now. You know, we got Elon Musk on the scene with the gigafactories and whatnot. Not sure how clean that one is exactly, though, but storage is pretty critical for clean energies. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, nuclear energy is the number one, pretty much, probably.
Well, why has nuclear gotten such a bad rap?
So I'm pretty sure you know this, and I'm sure probably a lot of the audience knows this as well. It's just nuclear energy is kind of one of these testy things because... basically, the whole concept of nuclear radiation. So when a nuclear reactor has a meltdown,
the most famous one recently was Fukushima.
Fukushima, right? Chernobyl. These things have been a giant stain in our society that people just don't want repeats of this. And, you know, people tend to put a lot of their faith and trust in the scientists doing their job properly. And these are clear examples of when things just go wrong, horribly wrong.
Well, to be fair, it's not the scientists' fault. In those cases, I think they're big examples of bureaucracy getting in the way. Because I think there were a lot of reports that there were issues reported up the channels, but the politics got in the way and people were trying to impress other, I guess, higher ups by showing that they're running things efficiently and cost effective. And it's,
yeah,
like,
I got that impression from Chernobyl. I know there was a series
and
on
the same
it.
Thing with Fukushima as well.
Okay, I thought Fukushima was just unavoidable. Just the damage was so bad.
I think there were reports done about this and very similar parallels with Chernobyl.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Politics. But that's the thing. You got to still account for politics too.
The human element is, yeah. This is.
Yeah, the human element is very real, right?
Yeah.
Politicians and bureaucrats are always going to fuck things up. So you always have to factor them into the equation.
Yeah.
And really the nice thing about thorium reactors is it's one of these, it sounds almost too good to be true, but it's a reactor that basically is meltdown proof in many ways. Mm-hmm. Its construction allows it so that if there was a potential overheating of or like, let's say, like a uncontrolled reaction mm-hmm. From the fissile elements within the chamber, then there are safeguards against that where the thorium, since it's actually liquid, well, the main type of thorium reactor that people are looking into is the liquid fluoride thorium reactor. And it's basically like you have liquid thorium in a tank mixed in with liquid or molten salt. So basically what happens is that salt gets heated as the thorium reaction occurs, mm-hmm. as the nuclear reaction occurs from the thorium. And there's actually a little ice, they call it like a freeze plug or something. So it's sitting in like a vat, if you imagine that. Mm-hmm. And a freeze plug's at the bottom, so it's like a cork almost. Mm-hmm. And that freeze plug is just kept cooled. But then if the reactor actually overheats, that freeze plug melts, and then the whole thing is just dumped into a cold vessel. Wow. So that's one of the advantages of the liquid
fluoride
thorium reactor is because you actually the liquid makes it so you can use gravity to get rid of the uncontrolled reaction, I guess. Whereas with a normal typical water reactor that we're used to, it actually uses solid fuel rods, which you can't really do that with.
Yikes.
Once the reaction is gone, it's over. Then there's many ways to mess it up. It's under a high pressure as well, so it's under high pressure. So if it gets depressured, then all of that stuff outgasses and escapes into the facility, basically, and now you have radioactive gas.
Wow.
So there's just so many factors in normal nuclear reactors that just are not good. And thorium actually fixes a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm. So in contrast to the more popular nuclear reactors, the more popular nuclear reactors are based on more heavy elements, right? I think. Or heavier elements? I want to say plutonium.
Not so much heavier. It's like it's still uranium, plutonium. Mm-hmm. And of course, as I think we even speculated last time, the reason that we used nuclear reactors was because we could get the plutonium waste products from that and make nuclear bombs with them. So people were interested back in the times when there was a debate on which way. So there's this basically split between parties on should we make thorium reactors or should we make uranium plutonium reactors. And we went with the uranium-plutonium ones.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons, because we were into making bombs, right? Mm-hmm.
So the U.S. government piggybacked off of, in that sense, right? The U.S. military.
Yeah. They were like, why not? We'll just kill two birds, right? Mm-hmm. We need bombs. We need energy. Let's do both.
Yeah.
So then that was basically the fate of thorium. And thorium kind of just disappeared for a long time, and not even people who had PhDs in nuclear physics even knew about thorium, really, after a certain point. Like, this is something that only kind of fairly recently surfaced during a TED Talk by a guy named Kirk Sorensen. He's a NASA nuclear engineer.
Oh, Sorensen. Physicist. It's a big guy.
Oh, you know him.
Yeah.
He's a big proponent of thorium, and he was the one that kind of broke the news. And it's really interesting how he did it, because he wasn't even really seeking it out. He was trying to actually build for NASA. I think they had some program where they were trying to think of how you could actually make moon bases and actually get power to those moon bases. So if you think of the types of power there are, there's wind, there's solar, there's electric, there's hydroelectric, there's nuclear. Mm-hmm. And really, there's no wind on the moon. There's solar is a problem because there's just not enough energy to keep that going. You know, the moon goes around the moon goes around the Earth once a month, and it's blocked for like several months, so you can't really do solar that way. Hydroelectric's not going to work because there's no water on the moon. So really, nuclear power is the only option. Mm-hmm. So then he's like, but here's the thing. Nuclear power, as our current iteration of it, requires water.
Yeah.
And there's just not that much water. So then he came to the conclusion that once he found a book on thorium, these thorium reactors, he realized that thorium was actually the greatest way to go for a power plant on the moon, because thorium's this abundant element on the moon as well as on Earth. That's pretty stable. I don't quote me on that. I think it's pretty stable, though. Mm-hmm. It's not radioactive, I don't think, yet, or very lowly radioactive. And it doesn't require any high pressures or anything like a normal nuclear reactor does. You can build it in a smallish kind of space. And it just seemed to be the vastly better option. So he's like, why have we never heard of this? Why are people not talking about this? Why can't we use thorium on Earth? And then he realized it was basically a political decision. And yeah, and then the rest was history. Now he is the whole foundation he started. I think it's called like for Thorium. He's got a website. I forget what it's called, but it's got to do with promoting thorium. And that's kind of his mission now. And a lot of people are interested in thorium reactors now.
Yeah, thorium is actually 3 times more abundant than uranium.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that just shows that it's very abundant on the moon. So, yeah, it's like this is clearly the best option to go with.
Yeah, because it says here that it's not fissile on its own, which means reactions can be stopped when necessary. It produces waste products that are less radioactive and generates more energy per ton.
Right.
Yeah. And but also another thing is, it's kind of funny because it seems to me that...
Forgot to start my clock.
No, there's 14 minutes here.
Yeah, but I can't see.
The the interesting thing is that it seems to me like uranium reactors need more maintenance.
Or need a lot of maintenance. They do. They have a lot of extra components, too, that a thorium reactor doesn't need. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot more crap added onto them that thorium reactors will just get rid of if they could exist.
Yeah.
But yeah, for one, the really big one being the high pressure, you need basically a high pressure tank around your actual reactor. And that's because if you do break pressure in the reactor, the main reactor, you are going to get a giant outgassing of all the nuclear radioactive particles, and they have to be able to fill within the tank. Mm-hmm. Thorium doesn't need to do this because there is no pressure, high pressure needed for thorium. When you have a thorium reactor, it just can operate at normal atmospheric temperature, so you don't need to actually put it under pressure. Some other things I think that are involved with nuclear reactors, let me think. You also need to have it close to a water source.
Yeah. And then you can pretty much, I mean, this is what happened in Fukushima, right?
Yeah.
The meltdown. Like it
starts expelling radioactive waste into the water.
Yeah. And so, that's like one of the saddest things that you can imagine, because then it starts seeping into the local environment. And then, you get catastrophic effects like Chernobyl, like Fukushima, where it's...
You get really long-lasting, long-lasting environmental effects that you basically irradiated your environment more than a century.
Like 100 years.
Like 10,000 years.
10,000 years. Okay.
The thing with thorium is its waste products only last for about 300 years or so. Mm. And those are fairly easy to actually maintain as well.
Yeah.
So thorium has... It seems like thorium's like this miracle thing that it's just like, why did we not push for it? Mm-hmm. And it just makes sense that it was because of bureaucracy pretty much. But it was, to me, in my opinion, just seems like it was completely the wrong move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because right now I think the reports say India leads the pack when it comes to commercialization. So it holds a quarter of the world's known thorium reserves.
I see. United States has a lot of thorium, though.
Yeah. But yeah, the India is the one that's moving towards thorium.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it makes sense. They have a huge and it's just interesting. Like, I think as you and I were speculating on why we don't see more of this, and I think it's because you don't in the U.S. But I think it might be due to the fact that we don't have somebody like an Elon Musk kind of person. I know we harp on Elon Musk all the time, but it's because
we're shills.
No, but it's because like he's a prime example of somebody in our who's not so far removed from our generation. I think he's about 20 years older than us, probably. Maybe 10, 15.
Yeah, probably about 20 years older.
20 years older than us.
Yeah, maybe 10, 15 to 20.
15 at the very least, I imagine.
Yeah.
And but he has similar ideas in the sense that he's always thinking about these bigger things and mm-hmm. taking these things that other people think are impossible mm-hmm. In the common, how would you say,
the common, yeah, I'm trying
the
to
way
think
of doing
too.
Things. What's the word I'm looking for?
The like, orthodox, maybe.
Yeah, orthodox, but just the established way of yeah. doing things, yeah. where it's like, oh, you're going to use you're thinking about using reusable rockets. That's hilarious.
Right, right. Or, you just have tons of naysayers when it comes to any kind of innovation like this, yeah. which is par for the course, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're a guy like Elon Musk and you're innovating on all fronts, then people just think you're just whacked out.
Oh, you're going right? to make an electric vehicle that's yeah. also luxury? Yeah. Ha ha.
Right.
And then 10 years
later...
Oh, you're
going to make it an internet company with satellites all in space? Okay.
Yeah.
And then the list goes on, right?
Yeah. Then 10 years later, you're a billionaire. You're
passing Warren Buffett in terms of monetary value.
Yeah, in 10 years. And yeah, it's just like... but it's... The nuclear energy, I guess, in this case, or energy, needs somebody to take the helm in that way, right? You think?
Well, honestly, I think the governments could do it. It's a good sign that China and India are looking into this, because I think it might go that way just from government assistance. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be faster potentially if commercial people took it under. Yeah. But I think it's a very risky venture because it's going to cost a lot of money and also research. Because I think there are some problems
in
terms
of
physics with thorium.
But that's how these things start. Like you pave the way using your own money. Like
not always. That's actually the unprecedented way things are starting now within our lifetime. If you think about all kinds of real big innovations in terms of like science, it's usually within the public sectors and government backed, right? Because yeah. there's less risk.
Yeah.
Commercial products were made once the science has already been established.
Yeah.
And thorium has some hangups in terms of its science.
How so?
Well, it's because the fact that the molten salt reactors, which is kind of the main one that people want to use with thorium, mm-hmm. because then you can have thorium be liquid and you have a very safe architecture. That architecture is very, very different in terms of the normal reactors we already use when it comes to, you know, using water.
So you can't necessarily retrofit.
It's going to be how I heard it described from a nuclear engineer was that it's like a big, it's someone who sidesteps from normal lateral thinking in a non-significant way. Or in a significant way, I'm sorry. Yeah. So it's going to take some cleverness to be able to figure out how to actually build a thorium reactor in a feasible, cost-effective way.
Gotcha.
There's a couple leaps.
If you're trying to use the current infrastructure, like of old abandoned nuclear facilities that have been shut down, because there have been numerous nuclear facilities that have been decommissioned out of fear of nuclear meltdowns.
Yes, and there have been, and I think some of the older molten salt reactors were like they were old nuclear reactors that were customized for using thorium after a bit. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what happened though. I forgot to research that part fully, but
sure,
the experiments got stopped in 2011 for some reason. I think they didn't pan out fully. But that's why China and India and I guess some of these other nations are trying to actually do more research and development to see how they can build a really solid thorium reactor, probably based on some of that research that they did already. So it's got some ways to go, and you know, money's going to have to be involved for sure.
Yeah,
an investment.
Would that be something you would like if you were to get into the business venture of like energy, mm-hmm. like
me personally?
Investing? Yeah, let's say you had a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Would that be something that you think you would get into if you could?
Oh, 100%. If I could figure out a way. I don't really know much about investing in that kind of stuff. I'm really, really a newbie when it comes
to
investing.
But let's say you have the wherewithal. You're a physicist. You have the brain of somebody who can be clever and think of clever ways to solve problems. Mm-hmm. Do you think this would be something that you would look into?
Yeah. If I could somehow put money into thorium energy being something of value in the future, I would definitely put a lot of money into that mm-hmm. because it seems very, very feasible, way more feasible than something like fusion, for example,
right.
within the short term. That's going to have a high yield, I would believe, in terms of practicality and just also replacing a lot of the energy needs that we have. Because I think in the future, I mean, you can already see the wheels in motion that most of the world is sick of using these pollutants and CO2 emitting types of energy infrastructures. So we need to reduce our carbon footprint.
And the thing is, like we're going to get into climate change because there are people that the people that are pushing back on the climate change thing, like
Republicans,
we almost have to bypass. We almost have to bypass them entirely.
Like
we can't. They can't be in the conversation anymore. We have to make these advances without them.
Well, these are just goofy American conservatives,
I know, but
right?
That's what I mean.
This is not even a political issue in the rest of the world. Like they just look at us as retarded people that make everything politicized. So it's going to happen regardless of what Republicans want or not. Not to shit on Republicans. I love Republicans, especially fiscally, but in terms of like things like climate, well, I guess this is kind of a fiscal issue in some sense.
It is,
because it was made a fiscal issue by, you know, gas companies and things like that that kind of manipulated
the dialogue,
the conservative party towards this. But it's going to happen regardless, right? The world is going to, the world doesn't care if you're going to be conservative or not. Everybody else is going to do what needs to be done in reality.
Yeah, we're all trying to find ways to move forward, and I think it's going to be an important dialogue of like this is I think this is something that needs to happen, and how to make it happen is the question, right?
Yeah. Well, money is definitely going to have to be involved, though.
Yeah, especially in America, but yeah, but also ingenuity, innovation.
Sure, sure.
But I think it's a mantle.
But
I
you throw enough money at it, I feel like it could, it's going to come about.
Yeah, but I think our generation uniquely is having to deal with this because we're having to deal with the long-term implications of industrialization, right? Like if we talk about the industrial era that happened 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, China's kind of going through its own industrial age in the span of 20, 30 years or something.
Yeah, they're really cooking.
But
they've,
you know, America had the luxury of spreading it out for almost 100 years.
Yeah.
As opposed to China, where it's like it condensed all that pollution in 30, 40 years, and then people are going to get cancer and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
trying to catch up.
Yeah, and I think a lot of look, I'm not opposed to industrialization because I get that you're getting, you're increasing the standard of living. You're increasing like just survivability in a lot of places. Like most children don't live past the age of 5, like in a lot of these third world countries. So getting everybody to this level is a humanitarian issue for me. So I think the world needs to be industrialized, but getting there cheaply and cleanly is probably the best way. Because right now, a lot of these countries that are coming up, they have to rely on fossil fuels.
Right, right.
But it's just going to create pollution.
Yeah, it's going to create a lot of emissions that we're starting to not be able to, we can't really afford to keep doing it like this. We need to really start curbing our footprint here.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that China and India and these nations are trying to look into that, because I think, honestly, I think we could bring down emissions quite a lot, because nuclear power is very, very good in term environmentally compared to a lot of the other sources of energy, even
I think better than solar and
solar and wind both, right? Both, nuclear is the best option of all of them.
Yeah, I think, and I'm going to look this up, but don't quote me on it, but I think it's true. I think
I looked it up.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, and it
like we're talking about margins like of like what, 10% greater, like at least?
I forget the exact margins.
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to be bold enough to say yes.
But I'm pretty sure that nuclear energy is the lowest CO2 emitting form of energy generation there is.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could make thorium reactors and a lot of the, in every, let's say, and if every industrialized nation was using thorium as their main power source, I think that would help a tremendous amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wouldn't have to even worry about doing things like really taxing companies. You know, we had the climate change episode, we were trying to think of how to curb CO2 emissions. If we could just knock it down by just having all of the energy infrastructure replaced with clean energy infrastructure, then you wouldn't have to even tax industries really on CO2 expulsion, because then they'll just want to use whatever the cheapest and available source is, which would be like thorium.
Yeah.
So
this would change, this has massive implications for for the economy, I think. But what was that guy? What was his name? The guy who did the TED Talk?
Kirk Sorensen.
What was his like takeaway? Like
his like, big takeaway?
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, his big takeaway is just basically introducing the whole world to thorium. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as he did that, that's when people only became aware of it. You know, people in nuclear physics PhDs did not even realize about thorium reactor.
Yeah.
Even realize that thorium reactors were a thing until he came on the scene. A lot of people didn't really know about it. They didn't know that it was such a good, viable energy resource. They just thought, you know, like most people would think, you know, the reason we didn't use thorium was probably because it was shittier than uranium plutonium nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
They didn't realize it was just a straight up political move that was also because we wanted weaponization. But actually the crazy thing is really now they're thinking that thorium even might be good for making weapons. So that could also be a negative point towards it. So thorium apparently can make enriched uranium.
Oh, interesting.
They used to not think it would because of some special property. I can't remember the exact property, but apparently they're saying people now speculate it actually might be easier to make better enriched uranium to make weapons now.
So enriched uranium is like, is it like, it's like uranium is like the great value Walmart version and then enriched uranium is like the Gucci belt wearing.
Pretty accurate. Pretty accurate.
What is that about? What is enriched uranium?
So enriched uranium is just a purer form of uranium. Mm-hmm. Pretty much how it sounds. It gives you a higher yield of nuclear power, nuclear bomb capabilities, so you can make a more explosive bomb that way. Mm-hmm. And you pretty much need it.
It's a more reactive version.
Yeah, you pretty much need it if you want to make high power nuclear weapons. And apparently thorium can create that. I think it's U-233 or U-235 or something. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. But thorium is U-232. It's a fertile product that turns into a fissile product due to beta decay. So we can get into the physics a little bit. So what basically happens is with thorium, you actually start the fissile reaction by bombarding with neutrons. So basically when it has a slow-moving neutron, that slow-moving neutron gets absorbed by the thorium atom.
Yeah.
The thorium atom now becomes from thorium-232 to thorium-233. Mm-hmm. That neutron then decays into, I think, probably an electron and an anti-electron neutrino or something. Mm-hmm. And then that leaves it with a proton in the nucleus. So now it's become uranium-233. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm sorry, protactinium-233. Mm-hmm. Then that protactinium is short-lived, and that decays again with another electron, anti-electron neutrino, and then it becomes uranium-233. And that uranium-233 is the main fissile product of the nuclear reaction that actually generates the heat to heat up the salt, the molten salt. Mm-hmm. And then that molten salt, of course, heats up the steam, and then that steam actually generates the turbine, which generates the power.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty simple if you think about it, but you're like, doesn't sound so complicated, but obviously it's mostly like the engineering and all that kind of stuff the clever physics you need with the molten salt carrying over that heat, I believe. I don't want to get too specific into that because I don't know exactly, but
the engineering controls are the...
I think also the physics has some problems as well. There's some problems with the physics too, because we're not used to dealing with molten salt reactors, so it works differently than water. Mm-hmm. But the whole perk of the molten salt reactors is you don't need solid fuel rods for it. You can actually have the actual nuclear product inside of the coolant as well, so it just makes it way easier. And then you can have things like the freeze plug where you can dump the whole thing if it overreacts.
So the rods, if I remember correctly, the rods serve as sort of catalysts, right?
Yeah, the fuel rods are basically what the thorium is. Fuel rods are basically what thorium is to the liquid fluoride thorium reactors.
But in the picture of uranium nuclear reactors, the fuel rods are rods of uranium?
Yeah, I think they are, but they're a little bit more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're like some weird like combo of elements that makes it work, but I don't know too well because I didn't research as much on the typical nuclear reactors. But I think they work very similarly. They just get bombarded by neutrons. I think they're higher energy neutrons,
though.
Yeah,
I think they would be.
And then they release the products. They also have more waste product, and you can use less in the fuel rods. Yeah. So thorium reactors are much more efficient in terms of actually producing energy as well.
Gotcha.
Probably by at least 10%, maybe even more efficiency. So it's a pretty good amount. But yeah, it's very similar, I think, to how it works in terms of the physics, the basic physics, that is.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that complicated.
No, it seems very understandable. I mean, that actually blew my mind when I was first learning about this, that how nuclear reactors are just basically glorified steam engines.
Yeah. When you said it heats up the bath and then you just get steam.
And you get steam and then that generates a turbine. Like all this work is just to make steam.
All this science is to make steam.
Yeah. You don't realize that until you start to get into like the actual science. You're like, oh man, all this shit is just the steam engine in different forms.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. True, huh? Because it's like, because then you talk about all the fuel changes throughout the era, right?
Yeah.
Throughout time, I guess. Except batteries. I think batteries are the only one that don't like.
Right. Batteries are a little bit more complicated because they're chemical reactions, right? So they're actually, the chemical, they're a chemical reaction. That actually moves electrons. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Batteries are only...
And also, like, hydroelectric, too. Because hydroelectric, it actually can turn a turbine from the water movement. And then that kinetic energy from the water actually can turn a wheel, which can turn a whatever.
I loved reading those books back in the 70s or 80s when the Hoover Dam was built. No, I think it was in the 70s or 60s.
Okay.
I don't know. When the U.S. government actually built, was preoccupied with... building infrastructure, having big infrastructure programs like the Hoover Dam and stuff. When they built that, because it's one of the biggest hydroelectric dams, right? I think
you're right.
And I've never been. I should probably visit.
Yeah, me either. Where is it at?
I don't know.
Hoover somewhere.
No, I'm just kidding.
Hooverville.
Hoover, Ohio. I'm gonna guess. I'm a bad American if I don't know where the Hoover Dam is. Huh?
Is that what you're gonna look up now?
Yeah.
Hey man, I'm right there in the same boat as you, so I don't know.
Oh, there's a city in Alabama called Hoover.
Okay. But you gotta look up where's Hoover Dam.
But I don't know if that's where it is. No, it's in Nevada.
Nevada. Okay.
I figured because you get those pictures
Nevada.
Of Nevada. Yeah, and. Yeah, it's a hydroelectric dam, but I remember reading like books when I was a kid. I don't read books anymore as an adult.
Me either.
I'm kidding.
I'm a heathen.
I remember reading just books saying that this is the future. Everything's going to be hydroelectric because it's like clean.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was clean and they were hyping it up that.
I remember books saying geothermal was going to be the future.
Geothermal is another one that was also hyped up, huh?
I didn't really get that one, though. I still don't know what it is, really. Is that just volcanoes related or something?
Yeah. So you use, like, I think in certain regions it's advantageous to use certain types. You almost exploit the environment that you're in. This is a smart way of doing things, where you exploit.
What are they throwing water into volcanoes and then using that as a steam engine?
No. I think geothermal, like for instance, I think in New Zealand they have one of the biggest geothermal plants. But because they lie underneath a some kind of how would you say?
I don't know. I don't know anything about them.
Geothermal.
Pretty ignorant of geothermal, honestly.
Plants. Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
Because this was like a decade ago.
I feel like it has something to do with heat and volcanoes, though. Maybe it doesn't have something to do with the molten lava under there's crust or something, maybe?
They use both water and heat, so...
Okay, so maybe it is what I was thinking. It is. Maybe it's not a joke where they actually are like putting water into fucking... lava and then the steam.
Yeah, so they use resources that come from either dry steam wells or from hot water wells. They drill wells into the earth and then piping hot steam or water to the
surface. It's what it is.
It powers the turbines. It generates electricity.
Wow, the troll is real.
Mm-hmm.
This is the great thing about being a physicist. Your bullshit can actually be true sometimes.
You can speculate. You can speculate on based on logic or operations, simple operations.
Like, no, it can't be that dumb. Oh, really? It actually is.
Yeah, so the dry steam plants, there are three types of geothermal power plants. One of them is a dry steam plant, so it uses steam directly from a geothermal reservoir to turn generator turbines. And this is the one that I remember seeing. Like, there's a picture of, like, there's, like, some underneath, there's some, like, thermal source that, you can use to heat up or evaporate water in a sense. And then they just exploit the fact that they don't need to use produce energy to or have anything to produce.
The heat's already there.
Heat's already there.
So you just let a water, you just somehow guide water into that area, and then the steam will just boil off.
I think
that's smart.
Yeah. And then the flash steam plants take high pressure hot water from deep inside the earth, meaning that they typically run, I think they run pipes underneath to run through to get hot, right? And then they run it back up to the surface. So they take high pressure water, hot water from deep inside the earth and convert it to steam to drive generated turbines.
Okay.
When the steam cools, it condenses to water and is injected back into the ground to be used again. So that's also another example of, like, I've seen pictures or diagrams where it's like, yeah, they show a pipe that's up here of the water source, and the water is typically, it's a closed system, so the water doesn't really evaporate and escape into the atmosphere. So it's like, just, it's constantly being refueled into the system. So it's a pretty cool, neat little thing.
It sounds very environmentally good.
Yeah,
because you're not really adding any pollutants in that system, right?
Yeah,
it's just literally using water and heat that already exists. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then there's a binary cycle plant, transfer heat from the geothermal bath to another liquid.
And honestly, I feel like you could even couple that with hydroelectric.
Yeah,
because you can have a hydroelectric facility that also has a kind of like irrigation path towards I don't know if they can exist in the same areas, but if it's possible, where you can just have something that guides the water down to the steam, so you can have like a double kind of facility in some weird way.
Yeah, I think if I was living in a if I was like in a post-apocalyptic environment, that's probably the first thing I would, like, if I were going to recreate society, I would probably do it using something like that. Because then you don't need to use these crazy
sources. And it's so easy to know. Like, you could probably come up with a way that at least if you needed energy, you could do it. And then you can start small and build up from there with enough people once you guys get the idea in your mind.
Because you could build a basic turbine.
Yeah.
Right?
And you could probably, and probably like 10 people at least could live off of that really well.
Wait, how would you do that then? How would you convert the? Because let's say you do have, let's say you are trying to rebuild society.
Yeah, let's do it. I like this. I love these games. I love rebuilding society in my mind when the apocalypse inevitably comes.
Inevitably comes with
using my physics knowledge to save the day.
This is the only time I always say this
is my fantasy, bro.
This is the only time we're valuable ever.
Rebuilding society.
Yeah, literally, we're the last resort. Like, society needs to rebuild. We're like, I mean, you can build. You can use engines and stuff, but it's like, you can. How would you do? How would you go about that? Let's say you're a nomadic person now that you're with your tribe of people. They've adopted you. You had nothing to the table just yet, but you discover a geothermal well.
Ooh, that's already money right there.
So you recognize the potential.
Yeah. But I was going to start even simpler than that, because I would have assumed that probably a geothermal well would not be that easy to find. No. I wouldn't know how to find one.
Yeah, I wouldn't know either. You just kind of get lucky, right?
Yeah. But my better guess would be to find a river. Because rivers are a moving river, because I feel like I could probably find a river or a stream that's moving constantly. Because then all you got to do is just build a water wheel. And a water wheel is just so fucking easy, because all you got to do is just chop a couple trees, build some paddles, and it's in the shape of the wheel, and then there you go. You have a water wheel now. And then to actually get the energy from that, extract the energy from that, what could you do?
This is the tricky part.
So I guess how would we actually extract the energy from it? So I guess it'd be like, what would the function of it be? So I don't know how it would store energy. Maybe you could store energy like in a gravitational way where you could have it like
well, it depends on what
lift
kind of,
something.
Because typically what we want energy to do is we convert that energy into work. Yeah, we want to do something meaningful with that energy, right?
Yeah. So you could do something. I could see something where like a very rudimentary thing is where if your water wheel is literally just like tied to a pulley, and you're lifting a rock, then you've just done work and now you have potential stored in that rock.
Let's say you want to give this little town electricity. How would you do it?
Oh, so then you would probably have to do something where...
You'd have to have alloy. Let's assume you have all the ingredients. You have metal alloys that are...
She has to build a battery, probably.
Let's say you have metallic... No. Let's forget batteries. For now, you
have
access...
Oh, you need an engine.
Let's just say you have metallic... You have access to metallic alloys. You have magnetic materials at your disposal.
Yep.
How would you do it?
So I'd have to build an engine then.
Uh-huh.
So what I would do is, if I could have a magnet, I would just build a simple engine with a magnet through a coil using Faraday's law. Mm-hmm. And then if you have a magnet, like let's say if you had a magnet that could just pump back and forth into a solenoid, then you can just generate current that way. And then there you go. You got current now.
There
and
you
then
go.
You can hook Terrence. That up to your hydroelectric thing. Boom.
Easy. Terrence just recreated that. But this is the simplicity of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not that bad. But of course, you got to find a magnet then. But
what you would, yeah. I mean, you would need to go extract those materials. But
I think you could even make a magnet. Because all you'd have to do is...
No, you'd have to find the alloys. You'd have to go out in nature and find...
Oh, because we're assuming we don't have electricity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we'd have to...
ferrite, find the ferrite materials.
The ferrite is kind of weird, though. I actually did a Twitter post on ferrite, and ferrite is one of the strongest naturally occurring permanent magnets, but it only forms due to being struck by lightning. So it's literally like these weird ferromagnetic domains that are all scattered initially.
Oh, interesting.
But then they actually get struck by lightning, and that lightning burst... actually gives a pulse of magnetic field that actually aligns all those things in this way where it becomes
it
a permanent magnet.
It forces the spins to take one direction. Huh.
Yeah, so it's like this weird kind of... it's a natural phenomenon, but this weird kind of lucky natural phenomenon where you'd have to like kind of think about how to make permanent magnets. So I guess you'd have to like find actually a ferrite cave or something and like set up some lightning rods or something. Get them struck by lightning and you have your permanent magnets. So it's getting a little bit complicated, but it's probably easier ways.
Okay, but these are the lengths you have to go to give electricity back to society in some sense. Right?
Maybe. There's probably some... If you're the commenters on our YouTuber, wherever you're listening to this, if you got easier ways to rebuild society, to rebuild an energy source and then transferring that energy source, what would you guys
do? So your job is to make electricity again for a town. Yeah. How would
do you have any other ideas, Juan?
I mean, you could use...
What would you do? Maybe you could start with the thermal spring. What would you do with the spring? Yeah.
I mean, like the whole thing is being able to convert that steam into meaningful energy, right?
Yep.
I would do the same thing. I would probably use the
you can use a water wheel for that too as well,
you
right?
You can, but let's just say you have to recognize that you have to use your environment to your advantage and adapt accordingly,
yeah,
right? But in this case, I think...
But you can do the same thing.
Yeah, the principle of it is you want to exploit magnetism. And that's where you get your current...
But can you think maybe of another way besides magnetism? Could we make electricity without magnetism? We could do chemically.
Yeah,
but
I mean...
But then the thing is, we're not chemists, so...
But the thing is, the Egyptians had a similar thing. Like, the Egyptians had... They discovered simple batteries. Like, they made... cells.
That's what I'm saying. So we could do an electrolyte solution where if you can find a cathode and an anode, that might be
Yeah, you would need something like a salt material, like sodium. You would need like a sodium bath and then something that's like the opposite, which would be... But then you would need to know some basic level of chemistry.
Yeah, which I'm not super good at. I know you can make batteries out of like lemons or potatoes or something.
Yeah,
or maybe both.
I think the Egyptians used... Yeah, I think they use some kind of sour. I mean, the good thing is that you can kind of taste. Your taste buds have this kind of sense of what is a salt and what is cations? Are they cations?
Oh, cations and anions.
Yeah,
I forget what
the distinction is. But basically, it's the opposite of something like a sodium was Na+, where it's like it needs an electron.
Is that why they hurt? Because they're like...
It's looking to bind.
Ionizing your tongue.
It's looking to bind with an electron, so you need to find like something with the opposite, like chlorine. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So it creates a potential difference between these two, where the the electron from the, let's say, chlorine wants to go to the sodium. So you can create this potential difference and then drive, you can create a current that way.
That'd probably be...
But it's very rudimentary. It's very low levels of current that you achieve.
You'd have to find a way to make it scaled up somehow.
The most efficient way to do this is what you're saying, by creating, having a magnetic...
You think. Maybe
material,
so.
And then just having it like mechanically oscillate
so
that you drive current.
Well, maybe you could use both in conjunction and then have the cell be one of your storage mechanisms.
You can have that.
Where how would you do that? Where
I mean, you'd be running.
Oh, then, you can make maybe an electrolyte by once you're doing that, you can actually charge the water in there, the bath, the electrolyte solution. But then what does that do? Because I know the electrolyte solution, when you charge a solution, you actually get a separation of atoms.
You,
this is kind of what we talked about in the last podcast with the cold fusion.
Yeah.
But then does that help anything? I don't even know if that helps. Does that help actually get...
It creates your... I mean, it's the same thing as you're basically recharging a battery that's you constantly recharge and charge.
Okay. So there's something there. We'd have to like be
the thing
more
is it's not as efficient. It's not you'd be able to power. I mean, you'd have batteries, but then you'd have like you'd have to build the clay. I mean, I imagine you don't have access to like a lot of materials, but I imagine you have to build a clay pot or something that's ceramic insulating.
Yeah, it can be simple.
It can be simple, but I just think the most efficient way to rebuild society is what you're saying, like get access to magnetic materials as fast as you can.
It might be hard, though, man, to find natural permanent magnets. That's the only problem I'm seeing. You'd have to find a way to get natural permanent magnets, or maybe you can somehow use static electricity to induce magnetism. Maybe I could see that. Whereas if you can somehow make a static discharge large enough, that would actually make magnets become permanently magnetized. That might work.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's some things.
Or you can be a cheap bastard and just like scavenge gasoline.
Scavenge gasoline. Oh, you're assuming that the infrastructure of reality still exists.
But that makes it easier. I think it's harder.
It's a lot easier if things already exist.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like a pure like situation if you were just to land on Mars.
Yeah.
And you had nothing left or something.
Yeah. You have to use the natural resources of the world. Yeah.
Life is a lot easier when you have things left over, because then you can just use whatever exists already and just fix that up.
Yeah. But I think that those are the basic principles to rebuild. I think you would need to exploit your knowledge of electricity and magnetism. Mm.
Dude, that'd be a fun ass movie. We need to see a zombie apocalypse movie that has like specialists like physicists on a team and like and like really smart people who build shit from scratch. That'd be interesting. Like a physicist, an engineer.
I've had this discussion with like postdocs in my group, where we would get into like how would you rebuild society if you could. Mm. And he's like, yeah, be simple.
He'd be like, a funny movie. This. Like if a bunch of graduate students had to rebuild society, a bunch of physics graduate students had to rebuild society. What would happen?
Yeah, it would be, I think it would be possible. It's just, the level of manual labor that you would need to do.
Would kill us off.
Would kill us off entirely.
Because like, nobody would want to do the manual labor.
And then I was just having a discussion with one of our roommates where we were like, and a lot of the physicists that we know don't want to have kids, so it's like, okay, that we're just not going to continue society. That was going to happen.
That's why it takes all kinds, people.
It takes all kinds of people. I mean, Lenz's law would, you know, producing EMF. If you're talking about, for you folks that want to do more research on this, I guess, ingrain it in your mind, Maxwell's equations, particularly. The third one, which I'm remembering, which is
Del Cross E.
Yeah, the Del Cross E. Mm-hmm. It's so funny that we don't remember the official names, but it's just like, you know, operationally what it is.
I think I do, though. That's Faraday's
law. It's the EMF law.
Yeah, I know the names.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the first one we start with, the Del dot E is Gauss's law. The Del dot B is the magnetic Gauss law, whatever that is. And then there's the Faraday's law and then Ampere's law.
Yeah. It's pretty
they got,
basic.
They got names.
But know the math, know the physics.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take you far. The other issue is like you would need to, if you wanted to rebuild society in that case, I think you'd run into the issue of needing AC/DC at that point. Like, you know what I mean? Because you're
going
to be...
If you're talking about going distances.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because then...
I'm trying to keep it local, man. I'm just trying to keep my 10 people around me survived. We can scale up later. I'm just trying to get first step.
Yeah, yeah. But that's the hard part. Like, that's the next hard part where you're like, now you're trying to make...
AC/DC converters and shit.
Yeah, now you're trying to make copper... I don't know if you're going to go with copper wiring, but you need something with like with a high enough... heat. I mean, what is it? I always mess these up. It's because I always get them inverted. The amount of energy that something, like the heat capacity of something, like low heat capacity but conducts good. Like a good thermal conductor is a good...
Well, copper also, is a good thermal conductor and
good electric conductor. Yeah. So in that case, you would need access to good copper wiring or some sense to like be able to give electricity to people. Mm-hmm. But then also have people recognize that... not to touch the wires, so
well, you just wrap it.
Yeah, but there's so many things that we take for granted in modern society that it's oh yeah, you need access to insulating materials, and you need good conducting materials. There's so much science is built on the backbone of all this, but
yeah, but you'd have to probably find a way to like build a way to construct these things. So you'd have to make your own kind of factory so you can actually make it. If you're talking about large scale, once you're really getting into building up society. But I'm thinking just like low level, like, you know.
The minimum.
Very local. How can I just survive myself with electricity and have a decent-ish life?
Yeah, you're like, how can I play? Let's say you're one of these types who like just want to get their the internet back up.
How can I get my League of Legends back up?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess is there anything else? I mean, we're almost at 55 minutes. Is there anything else you want to like add about that?
I guess maybe final thoughts. What do you think about thorium? Seems legit.
Seems legit. I just think we need somebody to take the mantle. Somebody with money, probably.
Yeah, I remember a comment that you mentioned yesterday that I kind of didn't want to. Remember, I kind of stopped you because I wanted to save it for the podcast, like, I wonder why Elon doesn't get into energy or something. I was like, yeah, that's actually, to me, I think that this would actually be a very good thing for Elon to invest in because, you know, he kind of has ideas of making moon bases, you know, for when his Starship is completed. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if you want to have real energy production on the moon,
thorium reactor is the way to go,
it seems, in terms of energy. So I feel like thorium's got to be on the rise.
Yeah.
Because it's such a good way to have power. Like, it's really the only feasible way to have continuous power on the moon. I don't know of any other way, really, that you're going to have that.
Yeah, unless there are geothermal wells in the moon that we don't know about. Which
maybe,
I
guess maybe they just operate on really low energy. I'm not sure how the ISS does it. I think they use solar, but I wonder if that's their only way of doing it. I'm not sure.
You also need very low power for
that. That's what I'm thinking. So maybe if your moon base is extremely low power, but that's no fun.
Yeah, it's not fun. I mean, it's not like you can bask out. Yeah. You can have leisure time on the moon. Yeah, what are you going to go outside and lay in the sun and bake yourself?
Right. You need some kind of like, you can, the internet's not that bad on the moon, probably.
No.
You know, it's
not
that far away.
No. No, probably not. You still get, well.
You probably get like a few, like almost, maybe like, I bet you probably don't even get a minute of latency.
No, probably not.
You probably get some latency, but it's
you're going
to
speed of light, dude.
Yeah, it's probably very bearable. Yeah, right.
I mean, it's probably not. It's probably better than if we're talking about pure satellite signals.
Yeah,
it's probably better than because at least you're probably just getting internet on the moon base. It doesn't have to travel like through optical wires over long distances. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
if today nowadays like the signal gets fucking garbled.
You search. Yeah. Either works.
Gets garbled up, you know, when it goes to multiple communication channels, or over long distances. We're talking about optical wires carrying signals. Like we're talking about.
Yeah, but also those signals get fixed up.
They do get amplified. They. I know there are markers that you reach or checkpoints.
They get refixed and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but still, that takes time.
Yeah.
You know, that's the latency in the system. But I imagine if you're operating purely on satellites and it's things are going the speed of light, they don't have to travel over the same.
But like, I would argue fiber optics still going the speed of light as well. It's so close to the speed of light. It's completely negligible to the human.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, you're not going to see any noticeable latency difference between that. I'm just strictly concerned about the distance.
No, I don't think.
I don't remember how far away the moon is, and I know it takes about 8 minutes for the Mars signal. I think, isn't that true, or am I lying about that?
8 minutes for the sun, I think.
Oh, for the sun. Yeah, Mars is even less than that.
Yeah.
Well, whatever time scale it is, I feel like the internet would probably be fine on the moon.
Yeah, internet would be fine. You probably have some. No, actually, you're right. I think you might have some latency.
Probably a couple microseconds, maybe. Yeah, not too bad.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Leave a comment. Well, actually, no. Let's wait till the
outro.
Outro.
All right.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, guys,
for making it this long. And I guess the question we have is, I guess, what is the question?
Let's do the one with rebuilding society.
Yeah.
So, guys, how would you rebuild the society if you could? So, leave us a comment on what you would do for your energy source.
Yeah.
And then how you would distribute that energy specifically.
Cool, cool. And once again, thank you for listening. And make sure to follow us on the socials.
Yep.
Eigenbros on Twitter.
Well, first, like, share, comment, subscribe. Yeah. You always forget that.
Yeah. Sharing is the most important part, but yeah.
Yes. But also subscribing, too, is good. So
that, too.
Actually, they're all important, but, Yeah, but and then also check out the website, eigenbros.com. Check out the new updated version of it. A little bit changes, nothing too drastic, but just check it out. Mm-hmm. Also, follow us on Twitter, eigenbros, Instagram, eigenbros, and then also TikTok. Possibly, if it's still there, Eigenbros 2, and we will see you guys next time.
Yep.